Welcome to Baterson. We make up stories improvised and recorded live. We start each story by choosing a random phrase from a source of text. My name is Casey, and my source is Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America and Two Essays on America.
By Alexis de Tocqueville. My name is Mike, and my source is Gig, Americans Talk About Their Jobs, edited by John Bowe, Marissa Bowe, and Sabin Streeter.
My name is Ben, and my book is The Feynman Lectures on Physics by Richard Feynman.
Hey, Drew Baterson here. I got A Distant Mirror by Barbara W. Tuchman. Its subtitle, The Calamitous 14th Century.
We will now choose a performer at random, and that performer is...
Ben!
Feynman.
Feynman.
All right. Flipping to a page, and... But are you wondering, what if I put myself in the frame of reference of the rotating cylinder? But are you wondering, what if I put myself in the frame of reference of the rotating cylinder?
I gotta get the whole lecture now.
There's a reason why he is so famous.
Well, that is our prompt. We will now tell a story on that prompt. But are you wondering, what was the rest of it?
I closed the book, guys. Okay. Something nobody was typing that.
Listener, what if I listener, put it in the chat.
I got it. What if I put myself in the frame of reference of the rotating cylinder?
Cylinder was the only word I got out of it anyways.
Okay.
Wayne loaded up the player piano with dueling banjos. The family gathered around. He connected the sheet. He pedaled the piano, and it rolled through. And even though this is an instrumental song, the whole family, all six of them, did all in gibberish tunes, did syllables, did the whole song. You know, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
And they got all excited, and everybody was so amped up. This was a family tradition. It came out during parties, holidays, celebrations, but this was a bittersweet moment, this, because they were sending Wayne off. Tomorrow, he was going to astronaut tryouts, and he had been preparing his whole life, and he had been building up to this for so long, and he was leaving, and he had staked everything on this, and this was the last time he was going to see his family for months.
After the music stopped, each of his family members gave him a piece of advice. His grandmother said, you know, always remember your snacks. And his grandfather patted him on the shoulder and said, bring a book. His little brother told him to keep his eyes in the sky. And his mom, who could barely get it out because she was very emotional, told him to keep his clothes clean.
And his younger sister, who was only seven but wise beyond her years, said, Wayne, never forget where you came from. Because where Wayne came from was not a place that they had never produced an astronaut in Cruntonville. And Cruntonville was a small town.
I mean, they haven't produced pretty much anyone of note, not even like a teacher. Like the most famous person from Crotonville drove a bus.
And there's a sign on the edge of town that says Crotonville, home of Gurney McPherson, bus driver, and he's the only one on the sign. And
Gurney McPherson had worked in it, not in Crotonville, but in a nearby city for 40 years driving the same bus route and was sort of a lauded member of the community.
And from Crotonville. He's from Crotonville.
Yes. Yeah. But born and raised. Yeah. But as soon as he reached adulthood, moved to the nearby town of Cornfield and drove a bus for 40 years, the same route.
By the way, don't you hate how they're always naming places after the thing that they destroy to build that place?
Like, preach.
It's just
welcome to Aspen Meadows. Yeah, right. Maybe once.
When gurney.
So good luck finding corn in cornfield is all we're saying.
Cornfield wasn't
around cornfield, sure. Around cornfield, yes. In town, no.
Surrounded by cornfields. Plenty of corn to go around in cornfield. And
outside of cornfield.
They brought it in.
No, they brought it into town. And they had a corn festival still. It was
and there was still a demonstration field in the center of cornfield, the latest hybrid varieties and so forth. Anyway, Gurney McPherson was driving that bus for 40 years, knew everybody, everybody knew their name, and when Gurney
super nice guy.
Yeah. And when he finally passed, they made a little statue to him, but back in his hometown of Crotonville, they were very proud of his legacy and his achievements.
Kind of tension between Crotonville and Cornfield because they both claimed the legacy of Gurney McPherson, and Crotonville didn't have money for a statue. It was no cornfield, money wise.
And so Wayne is headed off to astronaut tryouts, and this is so Crotonville would get to claim him without a doubt. Because he's never even been to Cornfield. I mean, he had to
go to Cornfield to catch the bus to Houston for astronaut tryouts. But
and that driver was no Gurney.
No,
that's right.
So he gets off the bus, and he's got his duffel bag, and they put him right in the barber chair and zip his hair off. And
and then they take him to the shower and they strip him down. They shave all of his body hair off. And yeah. And
they spray him down with anti-lice medication and anti-scabies medication. And it's a whole cocktail of different antimicrobial stuff.
They're
hitting
shocked. Him with powders. They're hitting him with powders and blasting him with hoses.
He's shocked at the thoroughness and really... He knew that astronaut tryouts were tough, but he didn't realize the incredible boot camp nature of it. He was getting screamed at by a drill sergeant.
And actually, when he came out of the cleaning chamber, the drill sergeant made a comment to him. Wayne just sort of said offhand, wow, that was kind of a lot of sterilization stuff going on. And the guy made a comment to him. Like, he looked at his clipboard and said, yeah, well, I guess we just don't really know what's going on up there in Crotonville. You know, we don't even know if you got indoor plumbing up there. He's just sort of making these digs.
Yeah, trash in his town. And, of course, that registered, but Wayne didn't want to say anything. He just filed it away. And boot camp was starting right away, buck naked. He was last in line, and all of the tryouters just had to run 2 miles and then do the obstacle course, co-ed. They were covered in mud by the end, but they had bonded like crazy because at the end you have to create a human ladder, a nude human ladder to get up this tall log wall.
And they all thought, oh, this is going to be no problem. And they hadn't really thought about the fact that they're covered in slick mud. Yeah. So it was just, they were there for hours trying to get up that wall.
It was a very Burning Man-esque scene, just like bodies slithering over bodies, but not in like a trippy or sexual way, just in a like sheer determination kind of way. In a body way. It was a little bit cathartic because they all came out of the showers as like these larval kind of shaved humans and then like scrambling through the mud and muck and like the bodies to get up to the top of this hill. When they emerged, they felt this sense of like power
and community. And this was a genius thing for the astronaut tryout conductors, but a tough thing for all of the would-be cadets because they were now one team of 20 people. Wayne felt closer to these people than any of his peers back in school, but only three of them were going to emerge as actual astronauts. And so the heartache started beginning right away. Two of the 20 were cut because of their performance on the obstacle course.
They were the only two who didn't make it over the log wall because the team hadn't been able to figure out how to get everybody over in the end. And so that was heartbreaking. And then immediately, as soon as they got back to the dorm, they tore them down. They did all the sanitizing, shave them, tore them down. And then they built them back up through this big team exercise, tore them down by cutting two of their new deep friends.
Time for a buildup.
And then they built them up and they said, hey, you all did a really great job today. And that really touched them because the drill sergeant had been nothing but terrible to them the whole time.
He had dissed every person's hometown as they got out of the showers.
And then, so they're built back up. And then he says, okay, one more thing before you go to bed. And they put them in this multi-axis gyroscope thing, and they made them go until they vomited. That was the thing. They had to go. They just spun them in all sorts of different directions and wheeled them around. So everybody vomited, and then they said, all right, lights out. And they had to go to bed covered in their own vomit and mud.
Yeah.
Wayne was remarkably undeterred by all of this. He noticed it. He felt it. He was suffering. He felt sad for the people that weren't making it and so forth, but he
had been preparing his whole, working on this his whole life. He was ready.
He was determined, and there was kind of a dark side to the camaraderie, which is that everybody was sort of eyeing each other and figuring out who was the weaker of the candidates, and Wayne wasn't in that spirit, but he was definitely determined, resolute, and unbothered by all of the difficulty he was going through. He went to bed that night with a smile on his face, despite his gross, muddy, vomity condition, and just said to himself, I'm where I'm supposed to be. This is what it's going to be like, and I'm in this to win this.
And the next morning, though, he went to bed. He slept well. They wake him all up at 5.
They cut 3 people for sleeping poorly.
but it's then immediately the drill sergeant's like, hey, it's really nice to see you all today.
The rest of you slept great.
You're looking great.
Look at you.
So they cleaned up and they had to get on this shuttle bus because they're actually taking them out to a launch pad because they're going to do some practice stuff out at a fake rocket set up, and they were going to do some practice stuff out there. And as they're getting on, they'll get on the bus, all still completely nude, and they're sitting in this shuttle bus, and the last person who gets on the bus is a woman who Wayne hadn't really paid too much attention to the day before. When he was hive-minding with everybody, he sort of hadn't really noticed her individually, but she sits down in the front, and he's a few rows behind her, and she's chatting up the bus driver, and she says, oh, you know, what's your name? And he says, Elroy, and she says, oh, hi, I'm Nicole. And, you know, they're just talking. And
I'm sorry, Wayne said his name was Elroy?
The bus driver
said his name was Elroy. And Nicole's just talking. And she goes, yeah, Elroy, boy, I tell you what, I have just an immense amount of respect for you and what you do. One of the most influential people in my life was this guy who was a bus driver who's from my hometown of Cornfield. His name's Gurney McPherson. And I always thought he was the most amazing guy. He inspired me to shoot for the stars figuratively. And now look at me, I'm doing it literally. And that's really my love and inspiration from Gurney McPherson is what brought me here today.
Wayne felt his blood. Like both at the same time, he was like so incredibly intrigued by this person, like another person from near his home, but also like his blood ran cold because of the long-standing feud about Gurney McPherson. And he started to stand up and he said, hey, and she turned, and then he didn't know what to say after that, so he just sat back down and she looked at him for a minute. And then
he felt obligated to say something. And so he said, Cornfield, huh? You're from Cornfield? And she said, yeah, from Cornfield, born and raised, finest corn in the 3-county area.
And he couldn't help himself. He was like, like hardly in Cornfield anymore. He just couldn't help himself.
And he said, I'm from Crowton.
He couldn't get it out. He was so mad. Finally, he sputters out, Crotonville.
And she says, no kidding, Crotonville. Oh, well, when I was in high school, we used to run cross country against you guys. And he said, yes, yeah, that's us.
She's like, go Corn Cakes. That was the Cornfield High School mascot, Corn Cakes.
And he said, go Crawdads. It's by Crawdads.
And he said, Elroy, one question for you. Wait a second. Have you heard of Gurney McPherson?
He's like, just now.
Anybody else here heard of Gurney McPherson?
He's like, Elroy's like, nah, I'm just playing.
Elroy, where was Gurney born? Where did he train? Where did he learn to be a bus driver? And Elroy said, everybody knows that. Cornfield.
Nicole's just nodding her head.
And what's his name?
Wayne.
Elroy?
Wayne.
Wayne. Gurney.
Wayne. Wayne's boiling. He loses that one because, I mean, that's the wrong information. But now that he's outnumbered in the Gurney history, he's going to get nowhere saying, no, you got it wrong. But he tries harder than anyone at the launch pad exercises and is at the top of the class. The drill sergeant says, Wayne, you're on the leaderboard. You're number one. And Nicole is number six, not going to make the cut unless she moves up. And five more people are cut. It's down to 10. Some tough goodbyes. Wayne was getting chummy with these people, but not as tough as that morning when they lost people from the sleep. By now, the cadets have learned not to get close to anyone because the cuts are coming. You never know when it's going to come. You never know when someone you've befriended is going to be gone. So there's a chilly vibe. People are sticking to themselves. And they spend all day at the launch pad, and they have to walk back to the barracks. And Wayne goes up to Nicole and says, look, I'm sorry I challenged you on the bus there. As you know, Gurney kind of comes from both places.
She says, what?
Well, we have this. Have you seen the statue on the border there? You know, welcome to Crotonville.
Oh, your little. I heard about that plaque or something.
No, we call it a statue, right? It's a sign.
Yeah. You're right. It's not that big, but it's important. You know, you can't miss it. It's like right there if you'd ever been. But
and she's like, so tell me, what does that say? What is that? I've heard about that, but like, why do you have that?
Wayne proceeds to explain the whole situation and how Crotonville is very proud of its native son, Gurney McPherson, and that Gurney, in fact, learned everything he knew later in his life about dedication and hard work and loyalty growing up as a farmhand in Crotonville, and how Gurney almost died once when cows trampled over him and managed to drag himself back to the farmhouse just in time to save the lives of his father, who he was working with at the time, who also got trampled by the cows. And she started to glaze over a little bit. He said, look, I don't want to bore you, but let's just say Gurney McPherson is from
Croton.
And she was like, Crotonville.
She was like, oh, she's like, I just thought, like, we all just thought that you all just like said that. Like we just, we didn't think
but
he
now
was
that
actually
you say
born
it,
there.
It but seems true.
You're going into so much detail. We always thought you all just, because there's no one from there that you just kind of were trying to get on some of that because he had been there or something. But oh, sorry, okay.
Yeah, and I guess good for him for getting out, you know, getting to Cornfield. I guess that's he made it, you know.
Wayne wanted to retort, but he understood that Cornfield actually, for a relatively small plains town, had a number of luminous figures that hailed from Cornfield. Gurney uh-huh. McPherson barely even ranked in the sort of all-time list. It was actually, from Nicole's perspective, kind of a quaint thing to be into Gurney McPherson. There were a couple Nobel Prize winners. There was a financier of note. There were a couple artists who were...
Famous race car driver.
Cornfield really only had like 30,000 people living in Cornfield, but they punched way above their weight class in terms of recognizable citizenry.
There's a couple of authors from Princeton who wrote a book that was called
What's in the Corn?
It's called What's
There's
in
Something
the Corn.
In the Corn.
And it was about this, how Cornfield was this unusually high achieving small rural town.
So Wayne understood. Nicole deserved to have a bit of smugness about it.
Which, by the way, it was called There's Something in the Corn. And everyone in Crotonville, it pissed them off so much because the corn comes from outside of the town. There's the, you can't, like, aside from the demonstration field, none of the corn that none of these famous people ate actually came from.
And they'd be legislating this with, like, arguments that they're having amongst themselves, just, like, infuriated about how,
and
like,
Wayne's,
yeah, there's something about the corn, but that it's not in cornfields.
Wayne's just, like, grandma wrote a book called If It Is the Corn, Then Who Cares About Cornfield? But, like, she's trying to, you know, make it
calling agents. She was trying to get a
hot take. Yeah,
deal.
But, like, yeah. I mean, yeah, she never got famous for it. So this, all of this is, I mean, you can't talk about this, but there's just nothing but touchy subjects here. So Wayne gets pissed about that, thinking about the corn, all the famous people, and they get back to the barracks, and the drill sergeant sees Wayne harassing this other cadet and says, Wayne, you're at the bottom of the leaderboard, run around the barracks 50 times and then clean my Jeep and then see if there's time to go to bed. And so he does. He runs around 50 times buck naked. He cleans the Jeep buck naked. He goes to bed. He's got about like an hour to sleep before they play the bugle.
Right before he goes to bed, the drill master says, hey, the Jeep looks great, by the way, Wayne. Really nice work on that.
Built him right back up.
Patted him on the shoulder, gave him a snack.
And then shoved him into bed.
This morning, when they all woke up, the drill sergeant presented them all with identical matching linen, sort of pale green jumpers. They all had their last names inscribed on a patch that was above the breast, and they all finally put some clothes on. And Wayne felt amazing. He felt like he was halfway to an astronaut already. There were only 8 of them left, and they started to eye each other with growing respect, but also feeling threatened by each other a little bit because of the narrowing field.
And this is a big day. They do a lot of classroom work. There's a lot of complicated physics. They have to do all this. They put them in those air tubes that simulate skydiving and zero G, and they have to work with tools while they're floating and hovering in the air. They're getting scored on everything. And at
the end, they have to do a presentation about a role model from their town, but it can't be a blood relation. So someone from their town that inspired them. And they can't do what somebody else does.
And so Wayne, hearing about this long day,
we're at the beginning of the long day.
Are we farther in the long day?
They've been doing all this stuff.
What's going to come? Okay.
I thought we were saying they knew at the end of the long day there would be a presentation. But if we're already there, we're there.
I mean, you tell us. Like,
I'm not. Where are we, Ben?
Okay. So Wayne is he's looking at the agenda
schedule,
for the day.
The schedule.
We're at the beginning, guys.
And we're at the beginning. It's the beginning of the day because
that was all in his Wayne. Wayne was just working it through in his head.
He's thinking working about it through all in his head, and he's like, "Oh man, he starts to get nervous, and he starts to think about kind of like what his grandfather said to him before. He was like, bring a snack, and he looks down, and there's the snack that the drill sergeant gave to him last night. And so he grabs it, and he's finally got clothes on. You know, he's got the jumpsuits. Is that what they were on? And so he slips it into a pocket of the jumpsuit.
And so, yeah, he's got clean clothes, he's got a snack, but before he can keep going through the rest of the advice that he got from his family, they've got an hour to work on their presentation. And so he does a ton of work on his presentation, and they're all furiously working in the library and just putting things together on their computers, doing all sorts of different stuff.
Calling people from home to get info.
Get quotes, etc. And they have to rush off to do all this stuff from the agenda that Wayne
already
read through.
Remind me what's on the agenda.
Yeah, she's got to do complicated math and physics problems.
There's
in
classroom work, right?
They've got to get in that skydiving tube and use tools to do zero gravity stuff. There's a lot of challenging things like that.
I remember.
And they're all eager, and it's timed, and it's scored, and all this stuff. And so he's wrapping up his presentation. They got to rush off to the classroom to do all those complicated physics problems.
We're there. We haven't gone into
it. We're still at the beginning. But they're done working on their presentation. So a lot of them dash out. And he notices that Nicole has left the binder for her project behind in the library. Everybody leaves and runs out. So he takes he looks at it, and a smile comes across his lips, and he takes her presentation, and he looks at the front of it. Sure enough, it says my local hero Gurney McPherson, and he sticks it in his duffel bag, and he just thinks, like hell, you know, no way, you know, this is it. And so they go, and they go through the rest of the, all the, they go do complicated math physics problem, they go on a skydiving tube, they work on tools, they get scored and everything like that. And it's a big day, and as we know, they're going to select three final astronauts from this crew of eight. And after all this stuff is done, before the final presentation, Nicole is ranked third, and Wayne is ranked fourth overall. And they've got a little bit of a break before they are going to do their presentation. And there's a huge gap after Wayne. He's not threatened by anybody below him in the rankings.
So she's just above the cut, and she's just right, and he's just below.
Correct. The cut off. If it were to end now, she'd be in, he'd be out. But, and everybody's anxious and nervous, but Wayne is just a cool cucumber because he has this ace in the hole where he knows that she does not have her presentation because he has her presentation. And he's got a great presentation also about Gurney McPherson that he is prepared to deliver. He's got all his materials. And so they've got like an hour before they're supposed to do their final presentations. And everyone's like scrambling around, and Nicole is like freaking out. And looking around,
the drill sergeant makes everybody call home and touch base with why they want to be an astronaut. The drill sergeant wants everyone to feel how important it. Why'd you do this? And this, everybody knew this. So the whole family, they're playing the piano for Wayne. They're shouting all at him like, we need you. We got the whole town in our living room. And Crotonville is counting on you to put us on the map.
And Wayne's like, yeah, I'm good. I'm feeling really good about it. And he's all excited. And he gets off the phone with his family. And he goes to they've got just a little bit of time before it's presentation time. And he goes out, and he's just gonna take a little bit of walk outside and get some fresh air. And he's walking around the parking lot, and Elroy comes by. He's putting the shuttle back in the garage for the night, and he comes by, and he opens the door, and he says, "Oh, hey Wayne, what you doing out here?" And on the radio, on Elroy's radio, he's listening to Dueling Banjos. He's got Dueling Banjos on the radio. And Wayne pauses and looks at Elroy, and he hears Dueling Banjos, and he's immediately transported back to the day that he left Crotonville. And the only thing he can
didn't
hear,
think about that day when he was on the phone with his family.
They were playing other stuff on the piano. Yeah. Well, this specific moment. No, he thought about all of that stuff. But there was one specific moment that he didn't think about, which was his little sister saying, "Remember where you come from." And
Wayne considered what that meant in a deeper way, and that Crotonville stood for something more than those big city cornfield selfish ways.
Those corn cakes.
And Wayne was overwhelmed with a sense of guilt, with a sense of remorse for having taken this presentation. And he decided he needed to redeem himself with Nicole.
And so he walked back into the lounge where
Elroy was like, "Hey, are you okay?" He just didn't say one word to Elroy, just turned on his heel and just left.
Didn't
him
answer his question
lot.
What he was doing out there. He just had a wide-eyed look and then spun on his heels, went into the lounge where everyone was thinking about their presentations, and Nicole was panicking. And
crying. Nicole was a wreck. She was crying.
Wayne handed her the binder and said, Nicole, I think you dropped this. And she said, what? No, I left it back in the room. And he's like, you're right, I stole it. But I regret doing that. And I want you to go first, or when I'm not, I'll go last. So you can do your presentation before me, and then you can have Gurney. And he sat down and they started the presentations, and there were some really good ones. One gal gave a presentation about a figure skater, and another
the drill sergeant
gal
actually cried a little bit during that presentation. The cadets didn't know it, but the drill sergeant had a daughter who he lost as a teenager in a terrible car accident, and she had been a figure skater.
And then another woman,
and that cadet jumped to the leaderboard with like way more points than
they deserved.
And
no one, right, yeah.
And then there was an inexplicable bonus.
There was another cadet. Yeah, she her person from her hometown was actually a famous cat that was sort of a cat that everybody took care of. It was a wild feral cat that was really famous in town, and she talked all about the spirit of freedom and resourcefulness and things that the cat embodied. And they didn't realize that the drill sergeant was a total cat person. He loved cats, so he just was really touched by that.
So at this point, Nicole and Wayne are out of the top three. And it's now Nicole's turn to give a presentation. She gets up onto the stage, and she had asked the light person to lower the lights a little bit, and things are dramatic. She comes up to the microphone and says, fellow cadets, drill sergeant, thank you for listening to my talk. I want to do something a little unconventional. I wanted to honor the memory of Gurney McPherson, but I realize in so doing that I would be stealing valor in a manner of speaking, because Gurney McPherson didn't, in fact, grow up where I grew up. He grew up in Crotonville. And if it pleased the major...
A shitty little
I would
town.
Like to,
next to my town.
I'd actually like to invite Wayne up
And she says, and as Wayne is coming up, she says, because, you know, one of the things... Gurney, you all may have heard me on the shuttle bus the other day talking about how Gurney was the person who inspired me to think big and
aim for the stars.
You heard my whole thing. But another thing that Gurney,
and the drill sergeant was like, I just got that.
And started crying.
Gave her 5 points.
Behind his exterior, the drill sergeant really, he wanted everyone to succeed. He really did. But she says, other than giving me this, you know, massive inspiration and this drive to do what I've tried to do, one of the things that was so special about Gurney was that he brought people together. And he always brought people together, almost usually on a bus, but he also just brought them together in a general sense. And it's kind of a shame that his legacy has been one that has actually divided Cornfield and Crotonville. So in the spirit of Gurney, I want to give the floor to Wayne here to talk about Gurney in his memory.
Wayne took the floor and told everybody what Gurney meant to him, what he meant to Crotonville, and what it would mean to Crotonville to have an astronaut hail from Crotonville, and went into great depth about the backstory of Gurney that Nicole actually didn't know anything about, because his youth had been mostly erased from history in Cornfield.
But the things he was saying about Gurney's childhood and upbringing were making Nicole think about stuff that he had done in Cornfield, and really generous acts that he had committed and special things he had done. And so they ended up sort of like riffing back and forth about Gurney's past and Gurney's eventual, you know, future in Cornfield. And just they were going back and forth and feeding off one another and building this up and up and up and showing pictures. And
the drill sergeant, who was originally from St. Paul and was constantly, you know, which was constantly being mistaken for Minneapolis. And like, he like really resonated with him, this idea of like one town overshadowed by another town. And he started to get really emotional about that.
And so their presentation was endless, and he actually had to cut them off. And he said, folks, I know some of you hadn't had a chance to go. We've only heard from, but I made my decision. And this year we're admitting 4 cadets.
The cat lady.
And the ice skater person, and these two from the towns.
They've touched me in a way that I can't even express.
And I don't want to preemptively judge any of the rest of you, but I'm pretty positive there's like, nothing you could say.
There's always next year.
The remaining cadets' mouths were agape with disappointment. And they all looked down at their feet and sort of strolled back to the barracks, sullen and disappointed. They had also worked for years on this. But they had to admit that this touching Gurney McPherson presentation was pretty incredible, and they all took a little piece of that home with them.
And the drill sergeant gave them like really nice swag bags on the way out to sort of send them out on a up note.
And so they had 4 graduates that year, and they had to design a new spacecraft because before they only had solo pilot spacecraft, and they had to design a new one with a bigger cockpit with 2 seats so that Nicole and Wayne could pilot together.
And back in on the day of their first flight going into space, one year later,
all the TV sets are tuned.
Yeah, in both towns, yeah. In Cornfield and in Crotonville, and they watch the everyone's nervous and excited, and they watch the launch go off, and the rocket goes up into space, and there's this tense moment, and everybody's uncertain, and then eventually there's this radio contact that calls back, and it's Nicole, and she says, "Houston, we've got 1 corn cake and 1 crawdad." Calling in from outer space, and everybody at Houston cheers. Yay. And everybody in Cornfield and Crotonville cheer. And around the demonstration corn plot in the middle of Cornfield, they have statues of all the Nobel Prize winners and race car drivers and authors and famous people. And they had one that was covered in a sheet. And after the launch goes off successfully in Cornfield, they pull the sheet off of it, and it's a statue of Nicole, who is actually Cornfield's first astronaut. So they have a big cheer. And over in Crotonville, Wayne's family walks out to the edge of town, and
with the piano, they push it all the way out.
It's got dueling banjos playing on it on repeat over and over again. And they go up and under the sign where it says Crotonville, home of, and there's a little plaque that says Gurney McPherson. And under that, Wayne's little sister holds up another little plaque and tacks it in with nails. And it says, and Wayne
Schmidt
Gretzky.
The end.
The end. The end.
Baderston Stories are improvised and recorded live over the internet. We clean up the audio, but we don't edit, rehearse, or redo any content, for better or worse. Subscribe and find other stuff we do at Baderston.com. And remember, when you're telling a story, you may not know where you're going, but you're all going to get there in the end.